Welcome to the Frugal Networker podcast show. I am Ken Hess, your host. The Frugal Networker is your online source for frugal IT solutions.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today, my guest is Chris Dotson. He is currently the Worldwide Infrastructure Architect for Infrastructure and Provisioning Requirements in the IBM CIO office. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. Today, we're going to be talking about cloud, smart cloud, and businesses getting into the cloud. So before we get started with the podcast, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself, your background?
Sure. I have been working for IBM in various capacities, all technical, since around 1995. I've done a little bit of everything from server support to infrastructure. And my current job is as an infrastructure architect, which means that I just try to put together complex systems, storage, network, servers into the right pieces. And that was sort of a natural led naturally into the cloud workspace around 2009 when my team was tapped to create an internal private cloud for IBM. And now I'm working on lots of different cloud initiatives in IBM, including the Smart Cloud Infrastructure offering, Smart Cloud Enterprise and Enterprise Plus.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Smart Cloud is and what it can do for businesses?
Sure. Now, Smart Cloud is actually a brand for IBM, and so there's a lot of things under that brand. There's the Smart Cloud Foundation components, which are the software that IBM writes to enable cloud, to help you build a cloud. Those same components are used in the Smart Cloud service offerings, which are the infrastructure as a service offerings, such as Smart Cloud Enterprise and Smart Cloud Enterprise Plus. Smart Cloud Enterprise is a unmanaged cloud, similar to a lot of the other ones out there. You basically come and you rent the infrastructure, and you can get other services in addition to just the CPU and RAM and disk.
And thinking about businesses transitioning to the cloud, I've always wondered how a business knows, how do the IT people or how do the administrators know when it's time or when they're ready to make the transition from standard server rooms or computers under the desk? How do they know when they're ready to make the transition to the cloud?
Well, I think that for a lot of businesses, the time is now, and I'm not just saying that because I work in cloud. But it really, if you don't have a compelling reason for your stuff to remain on premises, and there are some compelling reasons, performance, particularly latency, can be an issue for certain services. You don't want to be going out over the wide area network for them. Certain areas do have really tight security standards, which might require you to keep stuff physically on premises. Although the cloud security, frameworks are moving along very nicely in that regard, too, and with the different certifications and everything. But I think that now is probably the time, especially for infrastructure as a service, where you're just renting virtual hardware, essentially, along with, stuff that goes with that, and software as a service, which is, pre-built applications on there. Both of those are quite mature at this point. Now, the middle one, which I'll talk, a bit about later, too, is platform as a service, is not as mature. And so I think that the biggest value that businesses can get from the cloud is really with new stuff that you're building. Moving existing things that are working okay to the cloud sometimes can be a lot of effort. You really have to look at it and decide exactly what it makes sense to move. It can be very, very beneficial in some cases, and in other cases, it may not be as beneficial. But anything new that you're building, I really think that you should consider building it on the cloud, because I think you can realize both cost savings and just much greater business agility.
I think a lot of businesses and business owners and even IT shops that are, relatively small, compared to an enterprise, I think they're somewhat intimidated by the cloud and cloud computing. Is moving to the cloud from a standard server room or small data center, is it really just something for big business, or is it something for small business? And is there a huge amount of expense involved? I mean, people are so used to having servers that they can go and touch or reboot or whatever, and now they're moving to cloud, which is kind of a hosted environment. Is there there's some intimidation there. Do you think that's just something for big business to focus on, or can small businesses also leverage the cloud?
Actually, I think that the value proposition, if anything, is even stronger for small and mid-sized businesses who don't have the resources to have, you know, an army of full-time administrators, you know, a big data center, things of that nature. With cloud, small and medium businesses can rent a little tiny chunk of an enterprise data center without having to build all that themselves. And there's cost savings there as well, because that big data center has economies of scale that small and medium businesses just really won't see. That does not mean that large businesses are left out in the cold there. I mean, large businesses can really get a lot of benefit from that too, particularly if your core business isn't running servers, right? I mean, you can be a very large business, but really not be interested that much in running a data center. So I think there's absolutely an intimidation factor there. And I think there are both technical challenges and then there's just organizational change challenges. I mean, change is always hard. And in an organization, if you've been doing things a particular way, the people definitely have a resistance, sometimes well-founded and sometimes not, to that change. And then there's also the technical issues. As touched on earlier, not every single thing should be accessed over the wide area network, right? I mean, you've got some services, local file service, for example, which your network connections may not be fast enough to deliver the kind of service today that you need. Some of those things are going to go away as network connections get faster and faster, higher and higher bandwidth. But, I mean, we are stuck with the speed of light with latency, so some of those may not go away or will get better but not completely improve. So,
you know, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, so I think there is a definite intimidation factor, but I think a lot of it is really just a matter of organizational change and then dealing with the technical issues as they come up.
You know, there's a lot of news all the time about hacking and break-ins, you know, virtual break-ins over the network. And I think a lot of people are also intimidated by that aspect of the cloud. They see the cloud as sort of a vulnerable area, and they don't realize that, you know, there you can have just as much security in the cloud as you can in your own server room. What kinds of issues should businesses look for when migrating their services to the cloud from a security standpoint?
Well, there are absolutely security considerations, but I do think that people get a little overly scared of the cloud. Now, it's true that the cloud brings a few more avenues, potential avenues of attack, right? You're accessing these things that are physically remote. Generally speaking, you know, any reputable cloud vendor, the physical security at that site is probably going to be far superior to what you have on your in-house servers. I mean, especially with small and medium businesses, the in-house servers are often just, you know, if you're lucky, they're behind one locked door. These places, I mean, IBM has data centers that have biometric controls. When I go out on the floor, you know, I have to, I have my badge and there's a sensor to make sure that nobody comes in with me, and I have to use my fingerprint along with the badge to get in and everything else. So in some cases, moving to the cloud can really improve your security. In other places, there are, you know, some additional lines of attack. You're going to be on the same physical machine as somebody else, so it's possible sometimes for somebody to bust through the hypervisor. Although really, I do deal with security inside of IBM and things, and I haven't seen really much of that. Usually most of the incidents are more along the lines of people leaving lousy passwords. So I think when you're looking to move services or create new services on the cloud from a security risk standpoint, the most important thing is to know what you're responsible for and what your cloud provider is responsible for. A lot of people take an approach to security of, if it's not, you know, on fire, I'm not going to worry about it. And the problem is that you might just assume that your provider can magically take care of something when your provider, you know, clearly states, if you look, that the provider is going to handle the physical security and the provider is going to keep you separate from their other tenants, but the provider is not going to do anything on your servers that you build. Just like if you go out and buy a server from, you know, from a retail store and stick it there, the retail store is not going to come in and make sure you set the right passwords, right? It's similar. If you go out and buy a virtual server from the cloud and you put stuff on it, the cloud provider, in a lot of cases, is not going to check to make sure you have good passwords. So the most important thing, I think, is to know what you're responsible for and what the cloud provider is responsible for. Now, the next thing you probably want to check is you probably will at least want to take some look at what type of security controls your provider does have and make sure that they're reasonable. You don't have to be a security expert to, you know, to read through some of this and just get a general feel whether the provider does actually have documented policies. You know, they should be able to show you at least a little some of that. They may not show you every single detail, but they should be able to show you some of that and give you some assurance that they are going to do what they said they're going to do. And then the third thing is really that a lot of people are used to being behind their own personal firewall, their own corporate firewall, or their router or whatever. And you may still be behind a firewall on a cloud if you choose like a virtual private network solution or something like that. But if not, you might just be open to the whole internet. And certainly that can be a dangerous place. If you leave things wide open, somebody is probably going to try to crawl in. So you do need to realize if you're no longer behind your firewall and take appropriate measures. You need to put a firewall up on your own instance and just sort of guard against having weak passwords and what services you expose to the whole world and things of that nature.
So basically, the rules are the same in the cloud as they are in your own data center, right, as far as security?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just the rules are the general rules are the same. Some of the details have changed. I mean, I think that we'll look back in not too many years and we'll find the sort of hysteria over cloud security to be a little amusing. And the reason why, and it's not that there aren't issues, right? There are people 20 years ago who said, look, if we hook up to this internet thing, we're opening up our computers to where anybody in the world can connect to them. We're going to get hacked. We're going to get embarrassed. We're going to lose data. We may even be driven out of business by it. All of those things have happened. And those people were right. They were not, doomsayers. All those things can happen with cloud also, but I don't think that anybody disagrees today that you wouldn't hook up to the internet, right? It's something you have to do to be competitive in business, almost any business today, and I think that is going to be the case for cloud computing too. If you're sitting around with your own infrastructure, trying to run all of your own infrastructure, the folks who are using the cloud services and renting that infrastructure and renting some of that expertise with those economies of scale are going to pass you by.
I think you're right. It's just like anything in business, and I think a lot of business owners probably realize this too. There's risk in anything you do. Business is risk.
Yep.
Driving your car to the mall is risk. I mean, it could be broken into, it could be wrecked. You leave your house to go to the mall, your house could be broken into. I mean, there's security risk in everything you do. I think what you have to do, just like you were saying, is you have to assess the security risk and do as much as you possibly can to mitigate that risk.
Yeah, and the car one reminds me of an analogy I thought of, and people just love car analogies. You can have a car that's very, very safe, right? It's got all the recent airbags and anti-lock brakes and everything. It can be a very safe car. If you drive it into a wall, you're still liable to get hurt, right? It's the same thing with cloud computing. You can have a very safe cloud provider, but if you drive it incorrectly, you're still liable to get hurt. So you do have to take some care.
Now, right behind security, the next thing that comes to people's minds and mouths is their wallet. Are there any hidden? Yeah. Are there any hidden cost factors that businesses should be aware of before they transition to the cloud?
Well, I don't know about hidden. Well, one thing that I guess might be sort of hidden is, like we just discussed, you might need a little bit of additional security compared to what you need behind your own firewall. It could be just as simple as setting up a private network and a VLAN to get to it, or it could be that you are operating out on the internet and you need to take a little bit more care. So you'll save some money not having to run your own infrastructure. You may have to spend a little bit of that money you saved with some more security. That security probably wasn't a bad idea to begin with, but it becomes more critical if you move off-premises. Another set of costs that's not really hidden but maybe not very well understood, cloud infrastructure providers in particular charge for not just the physical hardware that you're using, not just the CPUs and the RAM and the disk space, but they also tend to charge, in a lot of cases, and everybody's charges could be a little bit different, but they tend to charge somewhat for how much you're using them because they don't want somebody to come in and take up all of any shared resource, and then they have to buy more and it raises their cost. So they want to be reimbursed for that. So there are things like the number of times you pay for the disk space. You also pay just a tiny, tiny bit every time you access it. So if you're beating the heck out of it, that can add up at some times. You pay for some things that for you might be a fixed cost if you're doing it on premises, your IP addresses. Your provider may give you a block of 8 IP addresses, and you pay the provider the same amount whether you're using one of them or all 8 of them for a small business. But in the cloud, you might pay just a tiny little bit for every IP address you allocate. So if you went out and allocated 100 for some reason, you might get charged a little more than you thought you would there. So I don't know that those costs aren't hidden. They're generally, with all the cloud providers I've seen, they're generally laid out very nicely in the charges schedule. They just can get a little complicated sometimes, and so you just need to go through that. And a lot of cloud providers, like Smart Cloud Enterprise, have charges estimators where they'll sort of have you fill out a little spreadsheet and you can see exactly what your expected charges are. The only other hidden cost I can think of is that you might plan to use it a certain amount, and you might find that you're using more of it than you thought because it's very nice and convenient and everything else. It's like a utility. If you leave the lights on, you get charged for them. If you turn more lights on, you get charged more. So your estimates can be based on one level of usage. You might find that in reality, you are going to another level of usage, and you just need to plan for that and put that in your financial plans correctly and change those as things change, just like you do with anything else.
Now, another cost, it's not hidden, as you say, but another cost might be using some expertise or some consulting services. I know IBM hosts Smart Cloud and cloud services, but you guys also provide the expertise that's needed on top of that in consulting services. Like, for example, if a company starts transitioning to the cloud and they go, oh my gosh, here's something I didn't think of, but they don't have anybody to ask, how do they engage IBM to help them with that?
Well, really the best place, IBM has a really good set of, you know, list of offerings and everything on the web at www.ibm.com/cloud. And if you go there, you can see everything from the private cloud offerings. One of the things I've worked on was, you know, the internal private cloud, which is basically the same service offering that IBM would give to anyone else. And we're very much an eat-our-own-cooking kind of company in a lot of respects. And so when we decided to have a service offering for build a private cloud, we tested it on ourselves first. And the infrastructure as a service offering, platform as a service, software as a service, consulting and implementation. So all that's laid out pretty nicely on the www.ibm.com/cloud page.
Let's say, now kind of changing gears, let's say that a business has actually made the decision to move to the cloud. Is there a difference in how the application designers and database administrators will design their applications for the cloud?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it depends. Well, I said absolutely. No, the answer really is it depends. There's lots of different infrastructure providers out there. There's lots of different software providers out there. If you're talking about, we'll assume for right now you're talking about stuff other than software as a service, because a lot of times with software as a service, you're using something that's already built. You might be able to customize it, you know, considerably, but you're using something out there that's already built. So if you're talking about building your own application rather than using one that somebody, you know, allows you to rent, if you're dealing directly with the infrastructure as a service, you have to build usually some resiliency and redundancy into the application design itself. I think that this is going to change fairly soon. I think the infrastructure offerings, as I mentioned, are very very mature. The platform offerings, though, there's a lot of platform as a service offerings out there, and there's not, to me, a really clear winner or you know, really huge adoption of a lot of those, although it's growing fast. The platform as a service offerings will allow you, your application developers, to not have to worry about things like that, to not have to worry about automatically choosing different availability zones and spinning up any, you know, additional guests when the load gets high enough or when one of the guests fails or things of that nature. So right now, if you're dealing directly with the infrastructure service, you have to deal with all of that yourself. You have to take into account failures. You have to take into account the redundancy you need and plan for all of that. And that is considerably different. It's a different way of thinking about your infrastructure, really. It's not necessarily a different way of writing apps. It's a different way of just having the app handle some stuff that you just trusted to the infrastructure before, perhaps. But there are other offerings like Smart Cloud Enterprise Plus, which have completely, you know, redundant infrastructure. And if you host on those, you can, you know, you don't have to worry about that. You know, you can treat that infrastructure just like you would redundant infrastructure there. If a node fails there, the virtual machines are automatically shunted over to a different node and spun up, that sort of thing. So it really depends on what kind of infrastructure service you're using.
Yeah, I think sometimes people get confused by the term cloud. I think they don't realize that really the server room that you have in your building or your office that you're using, basically, if you can just imagine that somewhere else, you know, it's really the same thing. There's computers in the data center for cloud computing, and all you're doing is really moving your workloads from your data center to the cloud data center. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. I think they think there's some sort of a mystique around this cloud thing that makes things different.
People absolutely think that the cloud is magic. I actually wrote a blog article a while back that, you know, four reasons why I hate the term cloud. The biggest problem is that cloud by itself tells you about certain characteristics and tells you about certain ways of using the service, but it doesn't necessarily tell you what you're buying. You really need a little bit more specific stuff like infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service, you know, or anything else as a service to tell you, you know, what you're actually buying and how it works. So I think that confusion around the term I disagree with people who say the term is meaningless, but I think that that confusion around the term does lead to that sort of thinking of it's magical. It's not. You're entirely right. You've got servers, you've got, you know, your data, you've got all those other things just like you do in any other computing environment. What's mainly different is how you get those. You can snap your fingers and have it spring into action rather than having to place an order, wait a few weeks, get it stood up on your RAID 4, powered, cabled, and all that stuff. You can have that in a few minutes.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like about the cloud is, I sat here and I was messing around with some of the cloud offerings that you guys have, and in just a few minutes, I brought up, seven or eight servers, whatever it was, and it was like, I could never do that in a data center. I mean, even me, a person who goes to the data center and reimages machines and sets up servers, it would take me, eight servers, eight Windows Server 2008 systems, it would take me a couple of days at least. And basically, I clicked one button and had a whole infrastructure set up for me, and it was very impressive. I mean, I couldn't have done it otherwise.
Well, and here's the kicker, right? After you'd spent that much time building those eight servers manually, or even if you had some automation, you wouldn't have wanted to just delete them, destroy them, because you'd spend quite a bit of effort, and you knew it'd take quite a bit of effort to get them back. So you'd leave them running. You'd have to feed them. You'd have to give them their security patches and watch them and check the logs and make sure nobody's getting in and all that sort of thing. On the cloud, with an infrastructure service offering, when you're done with it, you flick the light switch and it goes off, because you can get it back in just a few minutes whenever the next time you need it. And in fact, you get a fresh one back. You don't have to worry about what's happened to it in the meantime or what was left on it from before. So it really is, a different way of thinking about your infrastructure with the infrastructure service pieces.
Yeah, I really enjoy it myself, and I think it's a great way for businesses to leverage not only expertise, but also the ability to spin up an entire new business function immediately without all this. I'm sure if you've been in the IT business for any length of time, when you go out, even internally, even within IBM, and you're trying to start a new project and you need 10 servers, it's weeks, because of all the paperwork and all the things you have to do. This way, once a decision is made, you basically go in and set up your infrastructure and boom, you're there. You don't have to wait weeks. You can actually respond to seasonal changes. You can respond to, if you're going to do a marketing promotion, let's say you're going to offer some discount on your services or your products, boom, baby, you can have it up and running. You don't have to wait for weeks to provision new servers.
Yeah, and that used to be the way it was in IBM, but we've been using the internal cloud, especially for development and test, for 3 years now, and most people are not going back, right? They've gotten used to the fact that they can just click a button and get a server in just a few minutes. So, and we use the Smart Cloud Enterprise the same way. Just log on. We were using that alongside the commercial customers. So it's something. And the other interesting thing is it's something that you really don't realize how much you like it until you have it, and then you realize, this is allowing me to do a lot of other things. I think I read somewhere somebody said that one of the great things it allows you to do is it try things faster and fail faster, right? If you're going down the wrong track and you're going to fail, it's good to go ahead and fail right away, and then you just click the button and delete them, and you start on a different track rather than getting committed to a course of action because you spent 8 weeks getting the servers that you needed. It's exciting. It really is.
Okay, now we've talked about, how easy the cloud is and, the exciting things about it. Now we have to come to the downside of it and talk about gotchas. Are there any particular gotchas, or maybe not even gotchas, but stumbling blocks that might prevent a business from being able to migrate to the cloud smoothly, or something that they should think about on their path to the cloud?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, anybody who tells you that something's all pros and no cons is probably trying to sell you something. And with cloud, it's no exception. There are some drawbacks occasionally, and there's some misconceptions out there. One thing we discussed already, but bears repeating, is that there is a different development mindset if you're dealing with a non-redundant infrastructure as a service, which a lot of the infrastructure as a service are. That particular node that you're using it could disappear. Your data is safe. You know, generally the data is, it's much more highly available, but the infrastructure itself, the computer, you know, the CPU and RAM is sort of disposable in that sense. So that does bear repeating. Now, again, there are infrastructures out there like SCE Plus that aren't that way, but a lot of them really are. And so that's something you need to keep in mind when you're developing or using an application. Developing or writing an application. Another one is, you know, that I did mention, but organizational change is always hard. And so you're taking the servers, you can't see them, you can't touch them. There are outages occasionally in cloud infrastructures, although, again, if you leverage different availability zones, that's not generally a problem. But Amazon has had some notable outages. You've got outages when you're running the stuff yourself, too, of course. The main difference is that when you're running the stuff yourself, you can walk down there and yell at somebody, and when it's out there, you don't. Overall, you're doing better, I think, on most cloud infrastructures than you are with most local ones. But that's something to consider, is that you do lose a little bit of the control because you're renting somebody else's infrastructure rather than it being all completely under your control. I think the net result is not bad. The net result is you have higher availability, but you do lose some control. I think there's a gotcha in being tied to one provider too tightly. That's a problem. It's not as much of a problem now on infrastructure as a service, because the infrastructure as a service market seems to have become fairly standardized. But for a software as a service, for example, if you decide you don't like that particular software, do you know if you can get your data out? Do you know if you can actually take it somewhere else and use a different software product? Like Facebook, sort of a software as a service. Can you get your data out of there? I mean, Gmail is a terrific example of a software as a service. You can. You can download your email messages and you can push them into some other provider if they have it. But you do have to be careful of getting tied to one provider too tightly. And that's particularly, I think, right now a danger in the platform as a service market, because it is much more immature. And if you're on one platform as a service and you decide you want to move to a different one, a lot of times you have to rewrite the application, which isn't pleasant, or at least make really significant changes. Security. Security is a gotcha. I don't want to stand up and say that security is not an issue on the cloud. I also want to say that security is an issue everywhere, and while the cloud brings a few new things to it, it also helps with some security things. It's just a little different, and you do need to take some care there. And then I guess the one gotcha to me is assuming that cloud is always going to be cheaper in all circumstances, no matter what. Sometimes it will be cost neutral. I think in a lot of cases it will be cheaper, especially again small and medium businesses particularly. If you start adding up what you actually spend trying to run a small infrastructure, I think you find you can't compete with the big infrastructures out there with those economies of scale. But you also get a certain amount of agility out of it, and that has to be factored in. And that's something that's difficult, to come up with the return on investment on. But it's definitely there. I think those are the main issues, the main gotchas that I see. It's, like I said, like anything, there are some pros and some cons, but overall I see it as an extraordinarily positive trend.
Yeah, I think it's hard to put a price on convenience, like you were saying. Like I said, 2 days in the data center or a few minutes with a web browser to bring up an infrastructure. There's a convenience factor, and that's worth quite a bit to me especially, and I know probably to a lot of other small businesses that need to spin up infrastructure inexpensively and smoothly.
Yeah, and if you were the person spinning up that 2 days in the data center, perhaps perhaps you're spinning it up for someone else. Well, if they have to wait 2 days for it, certainly you can't just say that they're sitting around doing nothing else for 2 days. But there is a certain cost to them in a lot of cases at least, for them not having that right away, right? They may have to, they may not fail as fast if they're going to fail, and they may not succeed as fast if they're going to succeed. So reducing that cycle time, there's absolutely a benefit there. It's hard to quantify, but it's there.
Yeah, and I think, like we were talking about earlier, I think that, there are these things that, things that come up now in the news that, people want to respond to quickly. I can't think of something right offhand, but perhaps a disaster, happens, like Sandy. And yeah, You'd like to provide some services, or maybe even move your services to get them out of the path of destruction, because I think a lot of people experienced a lot of outages during Sandy. This is one thing. Your data center is not going to flood if you're using the cloud, because your data is spread out over a geographic area. So you know, there are some things about it that, you know, there's positives and negatives with everything, but I think with the cloud, and as you say, I think we're going to look back in time and go, what is it we used to do? We used to do what?
Yeah.
And now we've got this. Why did we ever do it the other way? But, you know, that's with any progress you make, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I don't think we're being silly right now. I mean, I think there are some legitimate concerns and things to work through and everything else. But I think the trend is clear. I mean, this is not a fad, right? This will change over time. Right now we talk about cloud computing. In a few years, we might just call it computing. I mean, it might just be the new norm to the point where we don't think of it in terms of cloud computing anymore. But I don't think that this is going away at all.
You're right. In fact, I think I'm going to steal that from you and change it from cloud computing to just computing. I like it. I like it that much.
Well, thank you.
Well, Chris, I appreciate you coming on today. And, you know, I'm sure the Frugal Networker listeners are going to be pleased with this. And but let me ask you, I know that you've got an upcoming cloud webinar. Could you give us some details about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The cloud webinar is on the December the 13th at 1 p.m. and we can get some information on how to sign up for that posted.
Great. And how can we engage IBM's cloud offerings? You gave a website earlier. If you could repeat that.
Yeah, absolutely. www.ibm.com/cloud. And if you know something about how IBM, you know, works, getting a top-level IBM.com, you know, slash cloud like that, it's definitely very important to IBM. Cloud is part of IBM's overall strategy, both externally and internally, in terms of IT optimization and becoming globally integrated enterprise. So it's a huge, huge push at IBM for all things cloud.
And finally, can you tell us how to get to your blog?
Yeah, absolutely. My blog is at thoughtsoncloud.com. So that's just all one word, thoughtsoncloud.com. And I'm one of many IBMers who blog there. I will admit it's actually been a little bit of a hiatus over the summer. I've fallen down on the blogging job. But I have four or five articles up there, and then there's lots of other articles by other IBMers on all things cloud there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on, and it's very good information. In fact, please feel free to come back again. We could do another podcast.
Great. I'd like that. Thank you.
Today, I've been speaking with Chris Dodson, who is the current Worldwide Infrastructure Architect for Infrastructure and Provisioning Requirements in the IBM CIO office. Until next time, this is Ken Hess with the Frugal Networker.
This podcast was recorded as part of the IBM for Midsize Business program, which provides midsize businesses with the tools, expertise, and solutions they need to become engines of a smarter planet.